cliffcentral.com.
Welcome back to Leadership Transformation Platform. I'm Adrian Groenewald, Louis Groenewald. This is the leader interview part of the Leadership Masterclass. First half hour, we spoke about toxic and authentic leadership in the education system with Dr. Louise van Rijn, who's our special guest today from Symphonia and Partners for Possibility. She's definitely an education activist, a leadership activist as well, and specializes in leadership. But she's become very well known in driving that through the education system where we have a lot of weaknesses. So Louise van Rijn, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, so let's just a little bit about you, and we'll look at your background, but you have energy. You often have to travel up here from Cape Town. You're on the aeroplane a lot, no doubt. You even go overseas to engage different parties and to add more value locally. I know when you're here, your days are packed. Here you are. It's now 5:30 after a long day of assertive leaders in a room. It's not easy. You still have energy. So what drives you? How do you do that? And you've been doing this for years, and you don't seem to let up.
So many people tell me that my passion can be a bit overwhelming. And I've been beating myself up about it a bit until Professor Janssen helped me see that there's something about being driven by our own brokenness. So I am for sure a broken leader with a vision. And I realize that I've experienced a lot of pain. I've personally experienced a lot of abuse and stuff in my life. And that's not what I want for my children, and it's not what I want for the future of our country and for the world. And so my commitment is to give it my absolute everything to shift some of those dynamics.
Mm. And you've chosen to do it through your leadership consulting business and broader, as well as the Partners for Possibility venture, which we'll talk about in a moment. Your background, so before you started Symphonia, and you have a PhD, what's that in?
Yeah, so I started my career as a project manager and a computer programmer. Realized that we were asking people, and I'm really giving my age away, but in the 80s, we were asking people to shift over to computers when they were not ready to do so. And I realized that there's a lot of human aspects. So I went into this kind of change management world and then realized, but actually change management doesn't help us if the leadership remains toxic. And so we need to work at an organizational development and a leadership level. And I had an amazing opportunity to do a doctorate with Rolf Stacey, specifically looking at complexity and how do you lead change in this complex VUCA world, thinking I was going to use that skill set to do work in large corporates because that's where I've always done my work. Mm. I did that when I was living in the UK, and we came back to South Africa. And I had no intention whatsoever to do any work in education. I was very happy to be a corporate animal until I just lost my joy in just working in business, because I realized that there's so much more. The real challenges in our country are education and health and unemployment and poverty. And business isn't going to do something about that until we shift something. So that became my question was, how do I, with my skill set, which is about organizational development and leadership mostly, you make a contribution in the world that's beyond making money? The making money became empty. I made good money, but it became empty, and it was just not fulfilling me anymore.
And you have now had many leaders in a room. You've directly and indirectly, and as I said, we'll talk about Partners for Possibility now, where you match principals with executives and where you just actually just develop leaders in your program that you offer the world. Just, I'm concerned that the leadership development industry has failed the world.
Yeah.
Or the world has run too fast, and that component of our society that's supposed to assist has not come with it, the VUCA world you talk about. So in your opinion now, after going through all of this, and I'm sure you're refining the process all the time, how do you believe leaders should be developed in today's world? What are the important elements? Yeah.
So the first thing is that increasingly people are finding that to put people in a group, in a room with a clever person at the front of the room and teach people content delivery and, it's not having an impact. Mm. So how do we shift it? So CCL came up with this model of 70-20-10. They say 70% of the learning happens while you do stuff. and while you fail, and when you, and we have to find a way of making that explicit and to capture that learning. 20% happens from our relationships with other people, from coaches and mentors and colleagues and being in learning circles. 10% of the learning happens in a room with someone at the front of the room. Mm. Now, that's harsh because it asks us to completely rethink who are these lecturers, what do they do. So our program, for example, we're teaching, you know, simultaneously 250 people around the country. And they run a very intensive leadership development program. But we don't, there's none of our team there. They're doing work in Letsitele in a school. They're grappling with the reality of working. And then we're going to send someone to Letsitele for one day or 2 days, you know, every few months. But the rest of the time, the work gets done because there's work to be done. And then all we've done is we've created a kind of container to capture the learning. And we have someone who helps people to do that. So for me, I mean, I'm very, very excited about the shifts that are happening. The fact that business schools are being, you know, business schools and the leadership development industry are being challenged to rethink how they deliver their content. I'll give you an example. I was speaking to one of the HR directors of one of the big banks yesterday. He was telling a story about meeting, you know, one of the people who used to coach people, leaders in this organization for many years. Now, this guy happens to be, and I'm sorry about this, but he happens to be the coach, is about in his 50s, white, you know, privileged, have lived a life of comfort in this country. And he said to me, you know, I don't understand that this guy's even trying to come and coach, because what we need is for the kids and Alex to coach our executives. Because that's where the future is. We need some youngsters who understand about the digital revolution to coach our executives. We don't need some staid old white guy who's lived up in privilege and, you know, because that's not the future. But the leadership development world is still full of old people who have lived lives of privilege, who's now trying to teach other people how to do things the way they did it. And then the reason the world is in the challenge it is because of that. We need a new. So if you want to, you said we need new. That's where we need new.
So we get trained in at nice universities in big cities by privileged people when back at the ranch, our customer base are in Alexandria or Soweto or, you know, Attridgeville or wherever it may be. And I could have gone through all these Harvard and courses and MBAs, but back in my office, I still haven't really engaged my true customer.
Exactly. And strange. I've not spent time. So one of the principles, you talked about the program earlier, the business leader, he's one of these guys who's been to Harvard and NCL, he's done everything. And now, for the last few years, he's been working with a principal in Soweto at the school where he graduated. Andre Young is his name. And Andre says, you know what, I go back to the school in Soweto and I learn more about leadership in the VUCA world from working with this principal that I could ever learn from going to Harvard or NCL or Gibbs. And I mean, I love those places. I teach at those places. I have a degree that allows me to teach there. But what I realize is the future lies in our ability to engage in Diepsloot and to know how to find your way around Diepsloot and how to celebrate the diversity in Diepsloot and how to get stuff done in Diepsloot when you don't have direct authority and control and how to work with limited resources. That's what leadership development needs to teach people.
Okay, so if I can go broader, leadership development should help you engage with your real, real world. So whether I'm in New York or it doesn't matter where I am, in South Africa, it's Diepsloot as an example. But wherever we train leaders, we've got to get to the 70-20-10 principle, you're saying, and we've got to find a way to help them engage their reality like never before.
Absolutely, because the point is, you know, if you ain't a leader in the VUCA world, you are confronted with volatility, ambiguity, complexity, and you can't learn that from going to sit in a classroom somewhere.
Is that why the world seems to be so unpredictable to people? We've seen some really unpredictable political results in South Africa, now in America, and no doubt other places in the world, because maybe leaders are being trained aloof from their world.
Yeah.
Totally disconnected from the reality.
Absolutely. And the story is, if you just have a good strategy and you just follow all the... I mean, that's not how it really works. In reality, you have a strategy and it doesn't work that way, and you try something else and you figure, and then you grapple with something else, and then you try again, and then you fail, and then you have another go. You know, so you see all those, these pictures of, you know, the story is it's A to Z. The reality is it's A to Z. All over the show, there's a wiggle. It's a, you know, a squirrel and a wiggle. It's not a straight line, and it's not easy, and it's very complicated. And you need to develop the skills to learn, live with that and deal with that.
Now, Louis, our interview yesterday with the leader of Dion Wired was also interesting, talking about inertia and cognitive inertia. Somehow there's a link here for me. Is that ability of a leader, again, to realize that I've got to engage the reality when I become the leader, as opposed to walking in and saying, right, I have a new team who have a hell of a lot of beliefs already about how things must happen. But hey, let's go on a 2-day offsite, come with a strategy and drive the strategy. Instead of saying, hold on, let's dig into these people's beliefs. Let's challenge it because the world is changing. Louis?
Louis, those of us here have had a lot of experience in leadership in townships over the years, more in a personal and a church capacity. And I think I've learned far more there about quality of spirits within them. Oh, man, it's nice to see it. And we have a lot of experience speaking to the Boffins. The Boffins recognize the need to be agile. Now, for instance, this course you spoke about, that really teaches you. We speak of education. What concerns me, we had a well-known activist on our show. We could hear a tremendous guy. And he was speaking that the answer is education, education, education. And I said, yes, but what education? Now, for instance, if you are burning your varsity down, what education are you learning there? Now, my point is, though, education must be combined with these kind of attributes,
yeah,
the ones we speak about, of what is real leadership and what is toxic leadership, or else education will not make you employable anyway.
So for example, tomorrow morning in this course, we're going to give the opportunity for these business leaders to do something very difficult, and we're going to videotape them, and then we're going to get them to watch the videotape. And they're going to give us feedback from watching themselves. But we're asking them to do something impossible for them. We ask them to watch the video and come back and tell us 3 things that they liked about what they saw on the video. And you know what, Louis? For most of the leaders, that's impossible. If I ask them to give me the list of 55 things that they didn't like, it will come very quickly. But they have a deficiency story about themselves, that they grow up into the world because of our performance management system, et cetera, et cetera. So now what happens is that deficiency story come from education. And so most teachers have grown up with a deficiency story. So they're not creating an opportunity for people to discover their gifts and what they're good at. So I've started to rethink about I think the role of education is to help our leaders and our children and our future employees to discover their gifts and what they're good at.
Hallelujah.
And to then help them live that and be that, and shift our focus from a story around what's wrong and how we all, you know, it's all going pear-shaped, just going, what are the possibilities given what we have in Alex? And that's the input. So when we send these business leaders into schools, we are stunned by what happens. So the first thing is, the business leaders arrive at the school, all they want to do is they want to fix some things. Just sort these people out. And our program is all designed to say, well, for the first 3 months, you're not allowed to. It's not even an option. For the first 3 months, you have to go and learn and listen and be interested and curious. And the business leaders, within a few weeks, say to me, I am so humbled. But they humble because they paused for a moment because they ran into action. They humbled because they took the time to go and listen and learn. And for me, that's a skill. That's a leadership skill, is to learn to just slow down, connect, understand the lay of the land, make people feel valued before you rush into something. And that's what the skill that we need in the VUCA world is, for leaders to realize that they do not have the answers. They have to learn with not knowing and get interested in what other people can contribute.
The contradiction, though, can look like this. The world is faster than ever before. Decision making must happen faster than ever before. You have, in the mining industry, I often say this, every 3 months I report to the whole world how we're doing, results. There's such pressure and visibility on leaders to perform yesterday. Shareholders want their part. So to then
slow down. It's so counterintuitive.
It sounds counterintuitive, but not.
But Dr. Phil really gave us a wonderful question to say, and so how's that working for you? you know, this fast-paced run. It's not working. It's not working well at all. And so if we have to shift it, and I've seen enough examples now of people saying, you know what, this is so fundamentally not giving me joy. I'm going to try a different way. And this different way is going to be, I'm going to slow down. I'm going to connect. I'm going to build relationships. We're going to figure it out because of the quality. You know, Nancy Klein says, the quality of my thinking depends on the quality of the relationship. If the relationships are shot, which has happened in most organizations, we are not going to think. And the quality of our thinking, of our doing, depends on the quality of our thinking. But we're not thinking because we're rushing, knee-jerk reaction after knee-jerk reaction. So we are advocating hard for people to slow down, to connect, to be compassionate to each other, to realize that when we are in a relationship, we can do work together. But if we're not in a relationship, we're gonna you know, honor a high road to nothing.
And you go to any top corporate leader, particularly, maybe even political leader, they have no gaps in their diaries.
To build relationships.
It's meeting to meeting, fly this place to that place. It's like a successful physician or doctor or specialist whose day just goes, every minute is planned. And you say to yourself, hold on, where's the slowing down? Where's the thinking? Where's the pondering? Where's the evaluation?
No, I think what I have to say, my diary is just as full, because there are big gaps that says this is just not, that time is not available. No matter how many people ask for it, that time is not available because I do need to think. Because if I don't fill my own cup, I have nothing to give to someone else. So I do think that, I mean, there are some leaders who are very disciplined about it, but what we're increasingly finding is that, you know, so the neuroscience says to us that our prefrontal cortex need to be working. We have to be able to think creatively if we're going to deal with some of these issues. But most people operate from their limbic system because of the fear and the anxiety and the pressure and all that stuff. So I think the leadership opportunity is to create a space where people can use their prefrontal cortex, where they don't have to work in the limbic system. And I know, because I've seen it time and time again, when leaders are conscious of that, look, the results go up. So this is not difficult stuff. So for me, Partners Possibility has become the vehicle of opening people's hearts. You know, we had yesterday a session, Brian Pretorius is part of the program, his two sons are part of the program, and he was saying he has seen with his sons that their hearts have opened because of their involvement in this program. So we're giving them a job. It's all very, you know, very traditional. It looks very traditional, but then the way in which we have them engage is we get them to connect as human beings, and we teach them about loving and compassionate listening to each other and what happens with your brain when you are listened to compassionately. And then they go home and they start to do that with their families and with their staff members. And we teach the principals to be able to give feedback to the business leader and say, you know what, you're being a real bully. Mm. And I say that business leader really needs to hear that, because in most of their lives, nobody has ever loved them enough to tell them that they're a bully. But because we're setting up this loving relationship, the principals are being taught to say, you're being a bully. And then people go, oh my goodness, maybe I'm a bully in my life. Maybe I need to rethink how I do things.
Just for those who don't know, how was Partners for Possibility born?
So I came back from the UK, found myself being very disillusioned by the corporate world, wanted to do something. I asked Ridwan Samuddin from Kanamea Primary whether he would be willing to test this idea with me, and that was in April 2010. And since then, Ridwan and I have been in a partnership. And then a year after that, I realized that actually there was so much benefit for both of us that we could structure this program and have more programs like this. So we started to run on a kind of experiential basis in Cape Town, the first group of 10 principals and business leaders. And we've made many changes to the program, but now, you know, the program's running around the country in rural areas and cities. And business leaders are learning about leadership from working with a principal, and they're learning about humanity and compassion from spending their time in a township, as you said, and realizing actually there's so much more in that township than that deficiency story. There's so much more about gifts and contributions it's a transformational process every time.
And in the process, their technical skills eventually get transferred as well.
We had one of the leaders yesterday who did a presentation about how she has changed as a leader, and it's unbelievable because I saw that woman on stage about a year ago. I couldn't believe it's the same person. Her level of confidence and she now calls herself a leadership activist. She would never have done that because she has seen what she's been able to do in that school. She says, I'm much more comfortable to deal with conflict and ambiguity. I now know how to get stuff done. I'm also much more frugal in my approach because I know how little is spent in the school. I mean, I tell you, I listen to that and I think, you know, why would anybody do anything other than, you know, spend their time on this program when they want to develop their skills?
But what's the spirit of this? You've used the education side, but maybe we need to, as leadership activists, find a way to enforce in businesses that when their top executives go on leadership programs, part of it is they must find a leader in a very under-resourced area, preferably maybe where their target market plays, but not necessarily.
Yeah.
And go on the same kind of journey. It may not be a principal. It may be a political counselor.
So yes, absolutely. I cannot say how excited this question, your point is. So we have been asked by many people to take this program into healthcare, into local government, into ECDs. I agree. The challenge for us is, when I first started the program, I said to 9 of my friends, listen, let's all go and work with 10 principals. The other 9, there was no impact. So we had to create a bit of a structure around it. We had to bring, we had to bring a coach and a facilitator and some community of practice. But the fact is, That's what Nedbank said. Nedbank said, we want to be the most admired bank in Africa. And we have a purpose statement that says we want to use Nedbank's financial resources to do good in the world. And therefore, we can't have our business leaders sit in business school when they can actually go and do real work in the world, learn at the same time, get stuff done, use their HR, IT, finance, all those skills, because that's far more aligned with our purpose statement. And I think increasingly we're going to see a lot more of that. So this idea of service learning, learning through immersion, what we need, Adrian, is more organizations such as ours who's willing to get out of that old way of operating and rethink how we do leadership development.
Because every leadership program, you would agree with me, they've all cottoned on to the fact that your first module, this is now the 10% going through a class experience. The first module is self-awareness. You know, and let's do personal discovery and all that stuff. Yeah, great. But that hasn't been good enough either. It doesn't change the leader. So you have to find a external journey like you do with your executives and principals in an under-resourced area where you really can't do anything other than discover yourself in the process.
Well, that's interesting. So this whole way of being working started with IBM sending their executives into places like Costa Rica. So I spoke with a guy, Dr. Phil Mervis, who developed this idea. And he said, actually, Louise, what you're doing with Spartans Possibility is much more interesting than this program that we're doing, because you are sending people into a school where the principal is voluntary part of the program. So in the IBM program, the NGOs get paid. So they have to put up with having an IBM person there for, whatever. In this program, we're not just asking them to be voluntary. We're actually asking the business leaders to make a 5-year commitment to the school. So over the next 5 years, you're going to be on this journey. And there's no space to run away. And what typically happens is these principals go, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore because I don't like working with you because you're being a real bully. And that's the moment that I celebrate, because I go, okay, now if we can get through this moment. But for most of the business leaders, that's that thing around being confronted with themselves. They've been through all this other stuff. Mm. They've just never heard that message because it was all so beautifully packaged and so careful, and we don't want to upset anybody. And now the rubber hits the road because we're asking these people to do difficult things. We're not asking them to do easy things.
Yeah. There's a Partners for Possibility today. You've got at least about how many principals?
It's 499. It breaks my heart. I so wish we could end the year on 500. But
you want to say 500?
I want to say 500. So it's 499 business leaders and 499 principals. Not all of them have been successful. For goodness sake, I wish it was. But those that have been successful have been completely transformational. And what's also been interesting for us is, even if the partnership doesn't, work because there's some drama, we've had people die and we've had people leave the country itself, there's still a transformational element because there's nine components of leadership development built into the program. So the partnership is one component, there are nine others. And the whole thing holistically is 70-20-10. It's taking people out of their comfort zone. It's giving them an opportunity to learn about the real world. But also for the principals, it's giving them an opportunity to learn about the business world, because most of them have not been spending much time in the business world, and they are equipping children for the future of the business world.
Mm. Your vision for Partners for Possibility?
So there are 25,000 schools in the country. 5,000 of them are functioning well. 20,000 are not functioning well. So our vision is that we want to get to 20,000 schools somehow. It's a very bold thing. But also that we can use this model in health and education, our health and local government. But more importantly, that South Africa is a contributor to new knowledge about how to do leadership development, so that we can move away from the story that South Africa has to get their input from the US and the UK, because that's where all the knowledge is. We are doing something here that's never, ever been done anywhere else in the world, at a scale that's never been done anywhere else in the world. And we have a story to tell about a South African innovation. I mean, like we've got stories to tell about creepy crawlies, etc. This is an innovation that we should be very proud of, and it's far beyond, I started it, but there's 1,200 people involved in the program at the moment. So there's a lot of people who's been helping to shape this. This is South Africa's success story that we should be proud of.
Yeah, and you ask almost any corporate, where can we contribute to society, and education comes up. It's just about channeling that correctly. Louis, before we end with a Sibanye executive leadership thought and have a minute around that, and Louise can give a final message to leaders, your comments?
Louise, I must admit that I'm a happy guy tonight in the midst of the hail outside, which the listeners won't necessarily hear. But what a joy it is to associate with you. We think the work you do is great. It touches upon hundreds of principles we've been learning ourselves. And this is what I love about good leadership. You can't stop learning. Yeah. It's one big process. As you say, the expression expert doesn't belong in the leadership realm. It's life itself. Thank you, Louise.
So let me share this very silly tweet that I sent this morning, and then you can give your comments on it, Louise, and then your final message to executives. I said, today's world, and we've spoken a bit about this, is as unpredictable as the U.S. elections. And then I say, it takes a special breed to lead, especially in today's world. What kind of breed does it take? Finally, and then your message to leaders.
I think it's the same, for me, it's the same thing. It takes people who are willing to be in touch with their humanity and to give it their best shot, but from a place of realizing their brokenness and realizing that there is no one answer. There are many answers, and we all have a contribution to make. And my role as a leader is to create a space where everybody can make a contribution rather than to be the answer and the provider and the, because that model is what got us where we are right now.
Yeah. Let's not keep making the same mistakes over and over. Your final message to executives?
Our country needs you. Desperately need you, and we want to invite more people to join this transformational leadership journey and discover something about the beauty of our diversity, and at the same time discover something about their own humanity.
Louise von Rein, thank you so much for joining us. Leadership, education activist, and kind of founder of Symphonia and Partners for Possibility. We appreciate your time and the difference you're making out there. And hopefully also making a living in the process. Stay with us. Next up, our business masterclass. CliffCentral.com.